It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 507 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of Caleb Palmquist. He's got an already successful Kickstarter going on for Unicorn Vampire Hunter numbers 1 through 3. We talk about how the series came to be, as well as who the characters are, and what kinds of things we can expect from it in the future. We also talk about what he has planned in the months ahead, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. As usual these days, please be sure not to pay attention to the sound of my voice, but to what Caleb is talking about, because he has a lot of important things that you should know about. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with Caleb Palmquist, the creator behind Unicorn Vampire Hunter. And there's a Kickstarter going on for issues number 1 to 3 right now. How's it going, Caleb?
Yeah, it's going great. How are you, Wayne?
Good. Let's see now, Chris. We're recording this a little ahead of time, but why don't you give us an update? How's the Kickstarter doing?
Well, at the time of recording, it's doing great. We passed our funding goal a few days ago, and we'll just keep going up and up. So it's honestly my most successful Kickstarter ever.
Didn't you do it faster than ever before you got your goal?
I did very slightly faster than the last time. Yep.
Okay, good. That's always a good thing. So what that means is your audience is growing and you're getting lots of people who jump on board. There was one guy who I support. He promised he was going to alter his beard if they got the goal within the first day. And he got that. And, of course, he took a picture of him that he'd altered. He shaved his beard in a certain way to match that. I don't know if that motivates me to support the thing. But I guess some people it does. But to me, all I care about is give me the book. That's all I ask.
And so, you know, that's funny because in earlier campaigns, I had done a lot of little social media gimmicks. And I found that since I created a book that people really connect with and really like, I'm less inclined to do them. I don't feel like I need to do things like it's fun. It's always fun to be like, oh, if I get to this amount of money, I'll drink some hot sauce or whatever. It's like, like a sort of a funny thing. But I mean, like, I think at this point, people are supporting my book because they want my book and not because, you know, of whatever I'm posting on social media.
You're not going to stand on your head for an hour or something like that. I don't know why you have to be punished in order to earn money. That's the thing I can't figure out. But and anyway, some people go for that, and I guess that's fine. But it just hilarious me. Now, as while we're talking about things, there are a couple of little things that you've been doing with the – and I mentioned it to you before we started to record – you've made it so that people who play Dungeons & Dragons can become Unicorn Vampire Hunter
characters. Yes, I have. I'm super excited about it. I love playing Dungeons & Dragons. I'm not an expert Dungeons & Dragons player, but I do love playing it. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to make a guide so that people could play Unicorn Vampire Hunter in Dungeons and Dragons. And so I worked together with my partner Lorelei who is an expert Dungeons and Dragons player to create a system of rules and stats and everything that we could put in this book. That's really beautifully illustrated. And I'm hoping that people really like it. It's to me, it's such like a fun, just new and different way to experience that world.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you doing that? I mean, when you play Dungeons and Dragons, do you play characters from your Unicorn Vampire Hunter?
So I didn't until I started building this book, and then we've been doing some playtesting with the characters. But I will say that when I play Dungeons and Dragons, I do use it as an opportunity to test out character concepts that I might include in books, where I think like, oh, would it be fun, you know, to have a half dragon kid who is like a genius investigator or something, and like, you know, maybe it's like just a gimmick and it turns out to be just, it gets a few chuckles, but really it's like I end up deciding it's not something I want to pursue. And sometimes there have definitely been bits of characters that I've played in D&D that have ended up in my book. So D&D is like a cooperative storytelling adventure. It's less of a game and more of a like an improv session,
you know? Right. I played it once, I think, decades ago. I was in college, and it was sweeping the campus, and they wanted somebody who had never played it to do it and then write about it.
Oh.
And I did that, and that's the only time I ever played it. I was interested in that. It was there were things I liked about it, and there were things that I didn't quite associate with. But it was I wrote the article in such a way that the people who loved it said I said I was against it, and yeah. the people who hated it said I was for it.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I did a good job of writing on that one, I have to say. Everybody was kind of on they kind of figured I was on the other side of it, you know. But I got a big kick out of that. I actually got an A plus for that. I turned it in as a class assignment
as nice. Well.
Got a nice article got written thing on that. So that's kind of an interesting thing, Dungeons & Dragons. It intrigues me. I don't know anybody that plays it anymore, and so I haven't played it for years. Like I said, it's been decades now, but it's still going on. So that's good. I'm glad to hear it's still going on.
Oh, it's I think Dungeons and Dragons is more popular than it literally has ever been.
Really?
Especially among younger people, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's so many YouTube shows and podcasts where they just play Dungeons and Dragons. And so like it's a really big thing. A lot of the people that I play with I have only started playing recently, and I play almost exclusively with people younger than me. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of excitement, for that. And, so the doing that D&D thing with Unicorn Vampire Hunter is one of those things. That's funny. I'm very glad that it's getting a very positive response. People are very excited about it, but it's one of those things that honestly I did because I wanted it. Like I wanted to have it. So I thought, well, I'm going to put the work into this, and even if nobody buys it, I'll have it. And I think that's fun. And it's just honestly a bonus that people are into it. That's sweet spot of like being like something that's just fun for me. It's a treat for me, but also people like it. So.
Well, good. As long as people get a kick out of it. I'm fascinated to hear that. It's kind of like magic cards, I guess. I always thought that magic cards was going to flame out, and it still hasn't. You know, they're still going on, and I'm just kind of fascinated by it, that people still get that even years and years later. When I go to the comic shop, my roommate goes with me oftentimes. He's into cards, although he doesn't play the magic very much. But the interesting thing is that, you know, I go and buy my books, and then he goes and buys the magic cards from them.
Oh, okay.
So when we walk in the door, I was like, so the cash register automatically opens.
Yeah.
Feed me, you know, because we buy a lot of stuff. So pretty good. So anyway, so that's a good thing. Now, there was another thing, too, that the stickers, you sent out an email about the fact that the Jonathan Fisher has designed vinyl stickers for like each of your campaigns for this book. And now that he's got there's the first two are there, and you want to do a third one. How's that going? What's going on with that?
Oh, right. So, the sticker was actually pretty cool because, for the first time I got fan involvement in it. And, basically, the first two stickers that I made, and I made one for Modern Mythology as well. So he had designed three stickers for me before that each had sort of a funny phrase or word on them. So the first sticker was a unicorn with its horn had blood coming off of, like it was, you know, drenched in blood, and it said, "This unicorn kills vampires." And then the second sticker was a vampire, and it said, "Vampires bite back." Then the third one was for my mythology campaign, and it had Zeus wearing a suit, and it said Zaddy, which is sort of a pop culture joke. and so I knew I wanted to do a sticker that had puppies on it, because in the story Unicorn Vampire Hunter, there are these magical puppies that never grow old. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't figure out what to put on it, what phrase to put on it. And so I came up with some different ideas, and I got some input from Jonathan and from some, you know, friends of Jonathan's and some of my friends and other people. And then to my email list, I sent them the art of the sticker, and I said, "Here are the different options and let's vote on it." And just a ton of people voted. And what it turned out is the majority thought that actually this sticker would be better without any text on it at all, because it's such an adorable, you know, just drawing of three puppies playing with each other. And and so we opted to go with no text. So this is the first sticker that Jonathan's designed for me that has no text on it, but I think it's great. I think it's very cute. I've already gotten all sorts of people asking me for stickers. I always put Jonathan's stickers on the back of my laptop, and I ordered some of these to test it out ahead of time. And I've got coworkers asking me if they can get a puppy sticker and stuff. So,
well, you know, you bring up a point that I wanted to discuss. I mentioned to you before we started recording, you did something for Edward that I got a kick out, because I, in comics, people tend not to do this. And a good example of this is Ben Grimm. He's been the Thing, and he cannot go back to being Ben Grimm. You know, but in your second book, and again, I thank you, you made all three books available to me, which I enjoyed, and the characterization is really strong. But in the second book, you did that thing that surprised me. Was that, and I think because it's in the second book now, we can talk about it. It's not a spoiler, really, to talk about it. Is that he got transformed back into being a human. I was shocked when I saw that. I said, they're never going to do that. They don't do that in comics. That never happens. But then you did it, and my jaw hit the ground. So I was really kind of interested. Was that intentionally to kind of go against the way that comics do things, or how did you decide to go and go that route?
You know, that's a good question. So I have this philosophy. Saying I have a philosophy makes it sound like I'm like sitting on a mountain and I figured out all the secrets to story writing. That's not true. I'm making everything up as I go along. But one of the things that I decided when I started writing Unicorn Vampire Hunter, sort of one of the guiding principles of my writing, was going to be that if there's a mystery or a problem, I'm not going to draw it out. Like, if I set up a mystery within an issue or two issues, I'm going to resolve that mystery. If I set up a problem, I'm going to resolve the problem. And that's not to say, obviously it's an ongoing storyline, but to me, it was like, okay, he's got this curse. Mm-hmm. He was cursed to live as a unicorn. Well, what if the characters can figure out how to break that curse? Mm-hmm. And then they just do it. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, the means exist. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have to be, you know, the be all end all of the story. Because the other thing is, for me, the story, and I think any good story, is about the characters mm-hmm. and their relationships to each other. And so the story was never going to be about like, oh, the story will be resolved when Edward breaks his curse. Mm-hmm. The story was Edward and Seamus are friends. They've been childhood friends, and they were apart from each other for a really long time. And now they've been reunited, and they're creating this family together with Jezebel and the other people in the marsh. And they're, and they have these like bonds that they're creating. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, better way to show that than to see that these other people in his life have the means and they figured out, here's how this curse works, here's how we can break it, mm-hmm. and let's just do it. I will admit there's a part of me that was like, nobody's going to expect him to break the curse in the second issue. And so let's do that.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. Now, one of the changes you did make to him, which I really liked, was that you gave him kind of the unicorn hair, the white, long white hair instead of the black hair that he had originally when he was cursed. And now he's got hair that lets you remember that he actually has been a unicorn.
Yes.
Was that your thing? Was that the artist? Did you come up with it together? How did you decide that?
That was my idea. Although obviously, any visual designs in the book are very influenced by Daryl and the artist. But I always wanted him to have been changed by being a unicorn. And he can change back into being a unicorn. So the idea is that, like, that's still a part of him. Mm-hmm. It's not as though time, the like 20 years or whatever in between didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That still happened, and that's still part of him. And so, and also, you know, the other part of it is that when he's young, he's got this black hair and he's impulsive and petulant. Mm-hmm. And now he's older and he's wiser. Mm-hmm. And even though he hasn't physically aged, he has this sort of white, longer hair. Mm-hmm. Which to me denotes that, you know, he is,
time has passed
and he's a wiser and less impulsive character. Although we will find out that that's not 100% true, that mm-hmm. those traits that got him into trouble in the first place are still there.
Mm-hmm. Now, something people always nag on me about, they never tell all the information, is that your goal was $6,000 and you passed that. When we were talking, you're over 8,000.
Yes.
Which is great. So you have over 300 backers, which is, yes. Wow, congratulations. That's a good thing. And the project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Saturday, November 13 at 9 a.m. in the morning, Eastern time. Mm-hmm. Which is great, because it's looking good for you're going on now. Have you put stretch goals out? I didn't take a look to see about that. You started? What stretch goals do you have?
So one thing that I have done for the last three campaigns that I've done that has been very popular is that I have guest artists come on to do prints that I do. If we reach a certain stretch goal, all the physical backers get a set of prints. Mm-hmm. And so for this one, we have three guest artist prints and I've revealed two of them already. Mm-hmm. If we reach $14,000, I'll be giving all the physical backers a set of prints. And then the sort of pie in the sky stretch goal that I've set is $18,000, which is for a map print. So I'm having a map designed by a very talented map designer named Clifton Chandler, who does fantasy maps. And I met him at the Portland, Oregon comic book convention, the Rose City Comic Con, just last month. And he's designed a map of the area that the RPG adventure takes place in. So, which is the same as the comic, which is the marsh and the forest. Mm-hmm. And he's designed that map. And so once we get closer to that first stretch goal, I'm going to reveal that map. And that will be included in the role-playing book. But if we hit the stretch goal, everyone will get a print of the map as well. And I think it's super cool. So I am, that's sort of my, you know, the point of a stretch goal is to try to reach beyond. And so, it's maybe a little ambitious, but I think we can do it. It's looking good, I think.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I hope so. Be great. It'd be great if you reached a place where you didn't have to do one of these for issue number 4.
Right.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great. That would be great. We have, we do have, it's funny because one of the things that I'm really proud of with this campaign is issue 3 is done. I mean, you read it. Mm-hmm. It's completely buttoned up. I mean, we have the files ready to go to the printer. And and so within a month of the campaign ending, I'm going to have those books in hand and ready to send out, which means that what I'm raising money for right now is not to pay the artist for issue 3. It's to pay him for issue 4 and hopefully also issue 5, depending on how well we do. And so, you know, it's like I'm always thinking ahead. And I've gotten to the point where this series has gotten enough support that I can really, we can start to work ahead. You know, issue 4 and 5 are written and, you know, we've started doing some concept art and we've, and, so it's, you know, the train keeps moving and, it, you know, people keep coming back, which is really exciting.
That's great. Well, I think one of the things that attracts people, attracts me anyway, are the characters and their relationships, as you mentioned. Even the vampire, I can't be completely mad at. He's got the business with the brother, and of course, the very first issue, the unicorn skewers his brother.
Yep.
And, you know, I can't be completely angry at the vampire because, you know, because I lost my brother not that long ago. And so for me, I can kind of feel like, guy, you know, he's got feeling, you know, he wants to take revenge on the person who killed his brother. And you know what? That's not an entirely bad feeling for somebody to have. So I was, you know, even that character, I have to say, there's shades of gray instead of all black and white, which I was like, and the whole business with Edward who becomes the unicorn, that whole story is quite touching to me. You know, the whole thing to me about he gets mad at Seamus, and this is all in the first issue. He gets angry with Seamus, and he treats him sort of badly, and then in the process, this whole thing happens about becoming a unicorn. And then, of course, that leads to the second issue, and it's really touching. I already mentioned it a little bit, was when he gets transformed back to a human. The response of Seamus and the others is really touching. I really liked it. Seamus goes, "Edward, you haven't aged a day." And then Edward looks at him and says, "Can't say the same for you, because he's obviously much older." And then they hug, you know, which is, I was really touched by that. I was shocked by him going back to being human. And then I was touched by the reaction to it. I really liked that. I think that's kind of one of the things. I think you're surprising us, and it's touching the way that you're doing things. I think that it's, like I said, even the bad guys have things that we can relate to and things that are going on. So it's a really complex book, which I like. I don't want just the black and white anymore. Right. I like the shades of gray. So I have to congratulate you. I think that's one of the things that makes this book such a success, are the way you're handling the characters and their relationships.
Well, thank you very much.
It's just really, really well done. I had a chance to read 3, and I'm not in any way going to ever spoil it, but I was shocked by stuff that happened in 3 as well. And I won't mention what parts did that, but if you enjoyed 2 and you enjoyed the surprise like I did of him going back to being human, there are surprises waiting in issue number 3. And that's a good thing too. I love to be surprised. I have read enough comics in my day, and I have, when I open up a book and I look at the first page, I usually can tell what's going to happen by the last page. And I really hate that. Like I said, when I got to that transformation, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it, because, you know, they don't do that in comics. And I, the fact that you were able to do it so touchingly, and, you know, that leads, of course, to other stuff, which is going to be great stuff. And whether it's permanent or not, like you said, may or may not be permanent. That's something to keep in mind as we go forward. So it's a complex story. It's interesting characters. It's really well told. And I have to say that I liked your stuff before, but this is really, I think, your best work is this book.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I mean, I like to think that I have grown as a writer. Of course, it helps. I won't ever say otherwise. It helps so much to have, you know, a really awesome artist and letterer on my team because, you know, they bring it to life. But I am one of the things that I'm really proud of is that, like I said, when I started writing this series, I sort of came up with some ideas, some rules for myself. Mm-hmm. About how I was going to approach writing it. And mm-hmm. the fact that those things paid off and that the kind of compliments that I get and the kind of comments that I get are mm-hmm. clear to me that the rules that I set for myself are paying off are, it's like, that's so gratifying because, you know, when I wrote my previous stuff, like A Small Favor, I didn't have those rules. I was kind of, mm-hmm. I was very much making it up as I went along. And now it's like, I have these particular ideas and I'm doing what I think are some bold things. Like the first issue is at least 60% flashback. Mm-hmm. And I had so many people tell me not to do that. They said, that is a mistake. You should not have that much flashback in your first mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. And then people came back to me after they read it and they were like, wow, I felt the relationships. I like believe the relationships in this book. And so I, you know, for me, that was like, okay, I had made some decisions. I was going to make these bold choices and I was going to stick to these rules that I set for myself and it paid off and it worked and it feels good to me. And, you know, like, of course, you know, with everything I do, I'm always trying new things, but I think that it's gratifying to me that I'm learning as I'm going, I'm getting better, and that, you know, I know that I'm doing better because I'm getting people coming back to me telling me that they enjoy my work and they enjoy these bold choices that I'm making. And so, you know, that keeps me going. So thank you.
Well, you know, it stunned me, and still stuns me, because, you know, when I saw unicorns, the last thing I thought is that they would use the horn to kill a vampire. I mean, I remember when I first saw that, I thought, you know, that makes perfect sense, but I never thought of it.
yep.
So that was something I really liked. And then, too, you've shifted gears again by, like I said, letting him turn back to a human. I love that I don't know what you're going to do next. I think that is such a big deal because, you know, comics, a lot of comics do very predictable things. And I think that's one of the greatest things that you're doing is surprising us. And like I said, 3 has surprises coming too, which when I read it, I was very surprised. There's several things that just, I was like, wow. And I enjoy the things that are going on. I like the different characters. I like the witch that shows up with the apple at the end of number 2. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of other things. I like the other woman, you know, the girl who's there kind of helpful, and then the sort of an elf kind of woman who helps with
Isadora, the marsh nymph.
Yeah, yeah, she really is. Because usually I see a nymph, I always figure they're going to be real small. She's not. Yeah. She's human sized. It's another surprise to me. See, a lot of people, when they break barriers like that, they do it in such a way that you don't like it. You know, if they'll do something and it doesn't really work out in the way that the story moves forward. And I'm always kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, they did that, but that doesn't make sense the way they're using it. Yours makes sense. I mean, I had to think about it for a minute. I said, what is it about this nymph that surprises me? And I had to say, wait a minute, she's full-sized. I always thought nymphs were smaller. So to me, that was, another great big surprise. All kinds of wonderful surprises, I just have to say. This is just a terrific book. I just want this to be an anime or a TV show or something.
You know, it would be great. So do I.
I think this deserves it. It just screams out to me. TV show or animated show or something. I could see this on Netflix in a second. It really, really, really works. So it's really great. So anyway, the book is a huge success. I think it's just, like I said, I think it's your best. You've gotten better and better and better as you do this stuff. And of course, now the big trick for you is going to be, after you get this done, you have to outdo yourself again to do another book. That's what we're going to have to see, how you move on and do this again.
It's funny because I have a couple other projects that are not this in development. And that is, of course, I mean, you know, how could I not be nervous about having, you know, something that has this well received, and then I'm following it up with something brand new? Like, oh, man, there's definitely, that feels like a big thing. The good news is that Unicorn Vampire Hunter is not ending anytime soon. There's a 5-issue arc, which will be wrapped up next year.
Okay.
And then there is another arc, and my hope is, I won't spoil anything. I won't tell you anything that's going to happen, but I think if you were surprised by things that happened in number 2 and number 3, when you get to number 6, you are going to be shocked. I think, it's going to be just nothing that anybody expected, and that whether or not that's a good thing remains to be seen. But
I think it will be, based on my reaction. Another thing that comics often do, if they make the person go back to be a human, they make sure he's got a unicorn horn on his head or something.
Yeah.
And that's the part that makes it kind of, that's when I look at it and I go, that doesn't work. Well, why do they do that? Actually, I guess they want to make sure we remember he's a unicorn. You did the smart thing by using the hair.
Yeah.
That was smart, and because he's still human, but he doesn't have silly involved with it. That was, I hate silly. Silly drives me crazy. You know, and so if he had still had a unicorn horn on his head, I would immediately go, oh, that's silly. Oh, that doesn't work. But the way you did it was smart. I really think that was a super smart way to go about that. I'm hooked on that particular sequence, apparently. I just want to keep talking about that. Now let's move on to some of the levels that you've got on there. The one that interests me particularly, although I have backed it, but I didn't pick it, was the $155 or more, the catch-up collector's bundle. I'm interested because you made 30 of them and you got 3 backers, which is a good number for that number, that amount of stuff. Digital copies of all kinds of good things, trading cards, the stickers, mystical landscape prints, the issues, of course, digital copies, the standard edition of number 1. I mean, you got a lot of stuff in this $155, and that, I mean, 3 people have already signed up for it. And as we're doing this, you've still got more than 20 days to go, so... Yeah, you could pick up very easily several more people to do that.
Right. So
that's a great one.
What's interesting is all the extra stuff that I've offered on the campaign, I really want to avoid the idea that this stuff is like exclusive. Like if you don't get it right now, you'll never be able to get it. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of the stuff I only sell on Kickstarter. I don't take. Typically I don't take the prints or the trading cards with me to conventions and those aren't for sale in comic book shops or anything, but I like the idea that like if somebody were coming on to it, they'd never heard of it before and they were coming on for the 3rd Kickstarter or down the line, the 5th or 8th or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were really like, I want to have everything. I want to have all the things. I don't want them to feel like they've missed the boat. Like if they really want all that stuff, then I'm going to make it available to them. And so basically that level is like, okay, this is everything I've sold for all of the Kickstarters. This is everything. And so, you know, if you want to get caught up and you're collecting all the things, like, this is the one. Of course, you know, there's other levels where you can just get all the comics, which is much cheaper, you know, or all the digital comics or whatever. And so you can definitely get caught up on the story without having to spend $150 or or whatever it is that I have that listed for. But, but, you know, if you want that stuff, then it's there for you. And I don't want it to feel like it's something that people who didn't get on from day one have just lost access to.
There are people out there who are kind of collectors.
Yep.
We were just getting started with Stabby Bunny, and we were at a pizza place of all things. And this guy came up, and he had bought a lot of stuff, and he said, "What don't I have?" He wanted to go through everything and pick out stuff that he didn't have already, because he wanted to make sure he had everything. Yep. And so he went through, he bought a whole bunch of stuff. And I remember going, you know, we've never had anybody ask us that before. What don't I have? So there are people out there, though, who like that, who want to get caught up and want to be feel like they're part of it. There are other people, like, I think of right away, who say, who continue to follow everything that goes along with Stabby Bunny and stuff like that. So there are people out there who like to be completists, who want to have everything that's going on. So that's a good thing to do. And I think that's encouraging. You've already got three. So I think that, that's a good thing.
So my general feeling about all of that is that, like, I mean, I also like to collect stuff. You wouldn't believe, I mean, I'm sure you would believe, you know, some of the stuff I've collected. And so I totally get that impulse. And I also get people who just want just the story. I have had people come up to me both at cons and message me online to say, "Look, your story looks great. I can't wait to read it. I'm going to wait for the trade because that's how I prefer to read my comics." And I say, "I totally get it. And I can't wait for you to read it when the trade comes out." You know, like, the, I want everyone to be able to read and own the story in whatever way that makes them happiest, that like feels best to them. So that's why I have so many different options.
And a lot of them are doing very well. The $9 or more for standard number 3, you've got 106 people. Wow. And then the $5 or more for the digital version, you have 73 people. That's almost 200 people just to get the digital or the physical version of number 3. Wow. That's a big accomplishment. I think that's great.
Thank you.
So there's all kinds of good things going on with that. I don't know what you've got in store. That's the thing that gets me. I love not knowing. When I can tell what's coming and I'm kind of like, ho-hum, okay, that's going to happen. But you have reached a level now where I am just baffled. I don't know what you're going to do. And I love that. So I think the wonderful thing is that this is just going to, I just think that this is going to keep getting bigger and bigger as time goes along. So I think it's really wonderful with that. Now, as we get to where we're coming to the close here, if people want to, well, let me again say that we need to get everything, all the things are going to be done by Saturday, November 13 at 9 a.m. Eastern time. I like to say that a couple times because sometimes people don't take it, write it down or something like that. You have over 300 backers, as I mentioned, which I think is another great accomplishment. That's a lot. And you still have, you know, November 13 is still a ways away.
Oh yeah.
So you don't get the daily heart attack anymore. You just got to turn it on and see where you are, which is a nice change of pace. I know so many people who refresh and refresh and refresh and hope that has it changed. It didn't change. Oh no, nobody's ever going to do it again. But you don't have to worry about that. That's the good news. Unless some $2,000 backer pulls out or something like that.
Right.
But that, hopefully that's not going to happen to you. It still happens. I know some people do have that terrible thing happen to them. But as far as this is just going, this is a huge success. And I think it's only going to get bigger as time goes along. I do want to ask you one thing, though, because sometimes when people do stuff, they will just say Unicorn Vampire Hunter number 3.
Yeah.
But you in the title particularly mention you get 1 to 3. That's another attempt to try to include people who may not have heard about it.
Oh, yeah. No, this is actually, and I can't take credit for that idea. I want to say that might be like a a Tyler James Vogel comics launch thing, or it might be, honestly, that would be my guess. Best guess is that I heard Tyler say it like years ago, but it could be, I could have heard it somewhere else. I don't know. The thing is the idea is that if somebody's never read this before and they see, and they never heard of it, and it says Unicorn Vampire Hunter number 3, they're going to think, there's a chance that they might think, well, I don't have number 1 and 2. Like I don't, but if it says 1 through 3, then it's like, oh, I can get the whole thing, which is true. I mean, part of the, one of the things that's great about Kickstarter, that's kind of the opposite of the traditional comics market, is that every time you come back, it's an opportunity for new fans to jump on. Whereas if I go to the comic store and I see the latest Punisher run and it's like issue number 14, I'm thinking, oh man, it's like, I'm probably just not going to read it because it's going to be a real pain for me to track down the other 13 issues.
Right.
Whereas with books on Kickstarter, it's like, oh, it's issue number 5. Well, you can get all of them right now, all at once.
Yeah.
And
such a smart thing. I think it's just, it's so great. Now, I got to ask you something. I'm noticing more and more that people who do Kickstarters, when the Kickstarter is done, they'll go over to Indiegogo and run another campaign after the Kickstarter is done. Have you ever thought of that?
You know, I've seen that, and a lot of people swear by it. I haven't done it yet, and it's not like I have some strong stance for or against it. I guess I've been satisfied with how much support I've gotten on Kickstarter, and I also know that running a crowdfunding campaign is very exhausting. I mean, I run these things for a month, and even if I fund early, it's still stressful. So to me, the idea of stretching that out to like 2 months, sounds really stressful to me. It's something I'm not opposed to it. And I've seen people have success with it, but I think that it's not something I've considered doing just because I think that I get the support that I want to get. And I just don't want to subject myself to an additional month of crowdfunding stress.
What I would hate is to have a successful Kickstarter and then you go to Indiegogo and it's not successful. That would be sort of a downer after a successful Kickstarter.
Well, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, okay, maybe there's an audience there, but most of my audience comes from the support that I've built up. Like I have a mailing list that I send out announcements to and new information and stuff. And those people really represent the core of the people who are supporting me. Now, as the campaign goes on, like now for the first like several days, it was almost exclusively people who are coming back who had backed previous Kickstarters, the previous issues. And now it's sort of converting to where most of the backers that are coming in are people who are new to the series.
Good. That's good.
Which is great. Yeah. But my concern about going to Indiegogo, and again, this is all theoretical, I've never done it, but my concern would be all of those people who were following me and wanted to support me did when it was on Kickstarter, right? So they're not going to back it again on Indiegogo because they already backed it.
Right. The rationale people use when I've talked to people is that they consider it to be a separate audience over on Indiegogo. There's a different group of people there. And so what they're trying to do is they get the Kickstarter people, and then they want to attract the people who are on Indiegogo who don't go to Kickstarter for whatever reason. Now, I don't know if that would work or not. It's always something to consider. I mean, you know, I'm just asking because I've run into several people who have done that. And so I'm just kind of curious as to whether that's something worth doing or not. And I guess just if you feel you're getting what you need out of Kickstarter, I don't know why you would kill yourself and do another month of Indiegogo. But
I mean, that's basically my thought. And again, like I said, I've definitely talked to people who have had a lot of success doing it. And people who swear by it and everything. But, you know, for me, it's like, I already so prefer the creative side to the business side. You know, I've managed to pick up a few tricks along the way. Like, mm-hmm. I think I figured out a decent system, but it's still, mm-hmm. I mean, it kills me. I mean, and the people around me know, like, when I'm running a Kickstarter campaign, like, I have friends who, like, I don't actively, like, I don't announce these things to them, but, like, when I'm running a campaign, but they'll be like, you know, we'll be hanging out and they'll be like, you've got a campaign running right now, don't you? And I'd be like, yeah, how did you know? And they're like, well, you seem pretty tense.
That's funny. That's really yeah. That's a good thing. Anyway, it's something that is, you never know. If the day comes and you're thinking about, you know, I should give that a go. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen, but you're right. You're getting a lot of support. That's wonderful that people are, you're hitting the two important groups, the people that come back, those, that's critical. And then you get new people as you go and do it. That is just, you keep it and you're growing your audience and making sure that it's going to keep going. I'm so happy to hear that because that means good things for the future. It's really, yeah. really good.
And it's funny, you know, because like, oh man, I mean, honestly, anyone who is willing to pay money for my silly stories, like I just like, I'm over the moon about, and it's like, you know, I love those people who I see them in the backers that have come back every time. They're like, those are like the ride or dies that are like every time they come back. And I'm like, so thrilled because to me, that tells me that they read my stuff and they like it, which is like the most amazing feeling ever. And then, mm-hmm. you know, then you got the new people who I'd never seen on the backer list who are brand new. And it's like, and they come in and they back, you know, they get the whole, all three issues or whatever. And it's like, mm-hmm. wow. Mm-hmm. They like, they must really think it looks cool, mm-hmm. To go in like that. And so, you know, it's just like, I mean, it's like, it's stressful. It's like a month of stress, but it's also a month of like, these incredible endorphin rushes, like you're microdosing on endorphins because every time you back, you're like, wow, that person is awesome. Like that person is excited enough about my work to spend money on it. And that is an amazing feeling.
Do you get people, you know, I mean like professionals that you know who back the your books?
Yeah. I mean, there's always people I know who back the books, you know, like, especially among the indie comics community, there are people who, you know, will like support each other, but, and you know, I also, you know, I have like, there's always people that are my friends that come around and support, but I'm glad to say that the ratio of, you know, friends and family members and stuff to like people that I've never heard of before back in my books is like way skewed toward the people that I don't know. Whereas, you know, my first Kickstarter for A Small Favor a few years ago, I mean, that was like 90% friends and family in that one. But that, you know, that's kind of how it goes. You like, you got to start somewhere.
Right. And that's how you get going. You just start with that. I know many people who their first Kickstarter was completely friends and family. Mm-hmm. They rarely got anybody else. But then what happened was that when they went back again, and yeah, they got those people, but they had more of that. So that's the way to do it. I think you've done it really smartly. And as you get the more and more people who are not, you know, who were not repeat backers and stuff like that. That's a tremendous sign. That is really good stuff. So really, that's so good. I'm so happy about that. Is this keeping you busy pretty much? Are there other projects you're working on that you can talk about? As you said, you're busy. People know when you're running a Kickstarter. So that's pretty much keeping you busy.
I mean, I have other projects going on as like, I just sent another book to the printer, which was Modern Mythology, which I kickstarted this summer and took us a little while to get done, but it's done now and that's being printed. And then I have a book called The Swords of Arthur, which is a King Arthur adaptation, which is coming down the line. That one's it's going to be a little while before that one comes out, but I've revealed some information about that and I'm very excited. And then I have another book, which I have not announced, and I'm not ready to announce yet, but hopefully if everything goes according to plan, I will have a brand new book that I'm going to launch a Kickstarter for early next year, which I think people who like Unicorn Vampire Hunter are really going to like this new book that I'm doing.
Cool.
So yeah, I've got, you know, I can't stop doing things. I like, I mean, it's like, it's a compulsion. It's a disease, you know, like,
well, it's like Lay's potato chips. They used to say nobody can eat just one.
Right.
And that's, you want to keep doing it. And the good news is the success encourages you to keep going. That's right. the good part. That's the really great stuff. Now, for people to know what you're up to, how do they follow you on social media?
So I am Caleb Palmquist on Instagram, and there are a few Caleb Palmquists. I am Caleb.Palmquist on Instagram, and you can find me at Unicorn Vampire Hunter on both Instagram and Facebook. Instagram and Facebook are really where I do the most updating. I do have a Twitter, but it is kind of a ghost town for me over there. those are kind of, you know, good places. And then whenever, if you want to find more about Unicorn Vampire Hunter, the best single way is to go to unicornvampirehunter.com, because whatever is happening with that book at the time, that's where that URL points to. So right now it goes to the Kickstarter, but after the Kickstarter, it will go to the website, or, you know, whatever is the most important thing that will give you the most information about that book. So
cool.
Kind of a versatile URL. I point around to different things.
Good. That's great. I wouldn't know how to do that. I can't figure that stuff out. I've seen several people do that. Ron Randall does that. And Carl Kasell does the same thing. He has links that go to, I think it's Impossible Kickstarter or something like that. It goes to his Kickstarter. What's going on? I always look at that and go, how do you do that? Sometimes. But again, it's called Unicorn Vampire Hunter number 1-3. And it's described as an all ages fantasy adventure about a unicorn who hunts vampires with his horn. Duh. It's just, which I like. And again, it's going to be, you already passed the goal of 6,000. So that's good news. And it's going to be funded on Saturday, November 13 at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that's good. So Caleb, just keep doing the wonderful stuff that you're doing. It's just getting better and better. And I'm glad to hear that this is, that there's a good future in store for Unicorn Vampire Hunter. There's great characters, great story, shocks and surprises, and really a good book. And just keep it up. And I can't wait for number 4. That's going to be fun. Do you know when that one's going to hit?
Yeah. So we are doing a combined number 4 and 5 Kickstarter early next summer. So it will be like around spring, summertime, maybe around June. We're going to do a campaign where you can get 4 and 5 at the same time, and they will be 100% ready at that time. So, yeah.
Good for you. I think that's going to be great. That's nice to hear success. When quality comes through and is a success, I really enjoy that. I think that's so good to see. So maybe next summer when that happens, we'll have to talk again and catch up as to how things are doing.
That would be great.
That's great stuff. It's, again, it's Unicorn Vampire Hunter number 1-3. And be sure to get in there as soon as you get done listening to this interview. But if you can't do that, make sure you get there by Saturday, November 13 at 9 a.m. So great stuff as always, Caleb, and just keep doing it. It's just getting, like I said, it's getting better and better all the time. I can't wait to see what you're doing next.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.